Good morning and welcome into a Thursday edition of the Blitz. 14 days, baby. Just 14 days. That's 1-4 until we get kickoff. Well, 14 days and like 6-7 hours, roughly, until we get Tennessee football back for realsies in our lives.
It's big time. You like those Thursday night kickoffs?
I like that I
it's closer than it would be.
I like that I get or have to wait two less days than everyone else.
Yeah.
Also, I just, quite frankly, if you're going to play a team like Ball State week one, yeah, go ahead and put it on
Might
a Thursday.
Might as well be on prime time.
Like, I because I'm going to watch Tennessee football above any and all other things, obviously. But, you know, if you go play at like 3 o'clock on a Saturday that opening week, I am going to be a little disappointed that my entire day will be wrapped up going to being at the game and then getting back from it. I won't actually watch any of the rest of week one. So I really, truly love having that Thursday night game. And then Saturday,
you just get to enjoy the rest of
I will sit there from college game day at 9 a.m., and I will sit there until the Hawaii game ends at 2 a.m., and I will have four TVs of football
on consuming
the entire time. I will probably only get up to pour more bourbon, pick up whatever I DoorDashed, and go to the bathroom. And it's going to be
a good day.
The best day of my life. So, I love having that Thursday game.
Those Thursdays feel weird, but it all is right when you get that whole Saturday.
You'll experience it now this year. It's kind of cool, like, having a show the morning of a game. It's like a neat feeling.
Yeah.
Like, last year, I remember driving in, and you know, it helps.
I drive in,
like, by the stadium, too. There's a little bit more than extra buzz. I have my windows down. I had Rocky Top going at, like, 8:30 in the morning, ready to go. And, you know, driving by the stadium, too, man, you just feel it.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for 2 weeks from now, just driving past Neyland Stadium.
Get in the game mode.
Mm-hmm. Go home.
That's a good day.
Park the car, change the clothes, and start walking back to Neyland.
How about that? 2 weeks.
1-4. 14 days, baby. Oh, and it felt like football this morning a little bit, too. At least, I don't know, maybe it was because my car was parked in the shade. Maybe that had something to do with it. But I did walk out this morning. I went and got my coffee, and you know, I went walked around a little bit. I was like, man, this breeze, like this temperature, it feels like one of those early, like week two, week three football mornings, you know, where you're getting ready for noon kickoff. You're getting ready to go. fired up.
Do you have a good morning routine? Like, I've been hearing every single morning, you're out, you're taking a nice walk, you're getting coffee. It's pretty disciplined.
I used to be pretty bad at morning routines, really. When I was on the Blitz before, I used to wake up at about 9:25, 9:30, roll out of bed and get ready and leave by like within 5 minutes, and then get here 5 minutes before the show started, and then talk sports. I was waking up at like 10 because didn't have to be here till noon. But I decided I'm gonna start getting in a better morning routine now. So yeah, I'm getting up at like 8, 7:45, 7:30,
nice.
Getting coffee, walking around a little bit, watching some Sports Center.
There we go,
getting things going. But going around the room, checking in on everybody. Sam, status report, good, bad?
Doing great. Played a little golf yesterday after the show.
Good round?
What do we shoot?
I played all right. Just kind of went out there.
What's his all right
number? Just kind of slapped it around. We didn't even keep score.
That means it wasn't a good day.
It was all right. I wasn't playing. I wasn't.
We didn't even keep score. Like, you know, we were just having fun. Like, yeah, I didn't that's what
probably
I say.
Shot
I probably hit like
round.
Three fairways, but then everything else was pretty good.
Okay. Scrambled?
Yeah. We were playing out of one bag. My roommate didn't have his bag with him yet, so we were playing all my clubs. I was putting with my wedge half the day. We were just kind of
That's a fun day, though.
Yeah.
You know,
it was a great day yesterday. Great weather to go out there and just – ride around and play 18, so I'm feeling pretty good this morning.
I'll be honest, Sam, I've had back-to-back really bad rounds.
You have?
You were with me for one of them where nothing made a lick of sense. Like, nothing I was doing I could figure out. The ball was doing things I've never seen it do before off of my club. The contact was different than anything I'd ever seen before. And the round before that was also pretty bad. And now I'm like, I'm so far in my head. I haven't golfed since last Friday, and I might golf this weekend, but like I'm still a little.
You just got to work through it.
I don't really know. Like, I'm scared I'm going to go out there and make whatever I'm doing worse because I haven't felt like how to correct it yet, you know, and all my practice.
Maybe you got to hit the range before you go play your next round.
Maybe. I don't know. I never actually know where to go to the range.
I'm so far removed from the golf game that I feel like if I went out there, I might have the best round I've ever had because I wouldn't be thinking about it. I feel like sometimes when I play a ton, I overthink it.
I was told you were a good golfer.
I mean, I can hit. Like, I've played my whole life. I don't think I've played in the last year.
Because, like, yeah, me and fun fact, me and one of Andy's roommates are boys, and I work with him, and he's like, yeah, dude, Andy, great golfer. Like, gonna, like,
I wouldn't say
consistently
great
shoot
to
in the 80s, and, like,
I have shot like, in the 80s before, but I haven't played in forever. I just feel like I played so much from, like, 2019 through 2021 that this year was just like, I don't know. I just haven't gone.
Why'd you stop?
I don't know. That's the question.
We'll start again.
I know. I need to. I need to. I feel like if I go out there, I'm not going to overthink it and just hit around. It might be my best round ever. I feel like that's how it works sometimes.
That is how it works.
Yeah.
I think
the more you think about it, it ends up being the worst round.
Normally, I play great coming off of like a 3 or 4 month period.
Sometimes you have to take that break.
A year is a little
maybe
bit.
Not a,
I don't know. I don't know about a year.
Maybe
but.
Not a year.
I took a very long time off before this past year because the last round I'd played was last August, and it was in the pouring rain, and it got to the point I couldn't even hold on to my club anymore, and like I wanted to fight my scramble partner. Like we were really coming to blows. It was my brother's old roommate's dad too, which is like not a good person to like want to try to fight. I was so mad that round that I quit. And I quit for a long time, and then I came back, and it was even worse. And then it just continuously got worse until about the halfway point of this summer when it culminated into one giant blow-up round, and then I tried to fix everything. And it actually – it'd been like a sharp trend upwards my golf game had, and then these last two rounds have really, really gotten in my head because I'm scared that I lost all the progress and just went back to the blow-up of last year and earlier this summer. But I don't know.
Maybe you need to take a week off, reflect, watch some film.
I got to start watching just a bunch of golfers. I'm going to watch some golf this weekend, and I feel like usually that helps me, just watching a bunch of golfers swing golf clubs. Andy, status this morning, you doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good, feeling fresh. I woke up really hungry for fantasy football, honestly. That's kind of been on my mind the last 24 hours. I see a lot of videos of it's either on TikTok or on Twitter of guys and like, that are, I feel like, either in high school or early college, just giving me really, I don't know if it's good fantasy advice, but I take it very seriously.
The TikTokers?
I take it very, yes, there's
dude,
so many.
I think that's like one out of every three videos, yes. Just like what you need to know.
Yeah, and
Ty Algier is getting the majority of carries at Atlanta camp, and he was the BYU leading rusher. This is a guy that is getting an ADP of 41, but I think he should have an ADP of 35.
And he's going to have about 4 snaps a game.
Actually, I he was like, I love Ty Algier. I wanted him on the Titans so bad, but
it's always some kid wearing like their favorite team's uniform, and they're in high school, and they say my bold predictions, and I take it as like they are Matthew Berry. I'll take it so seriously. I'm like, oh, gotta write this down.
They add like 3 just basic preseason clips.
Yeah,
like NFL Game Pass.
My booms of the year, Jonathan Taylor. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about.
I've been getting into some fantasy too, but I don't like to do too much research. I don't like to listen to too many other people.
Yeah.
I guess.
That's my issue is I see so much. And
I like
just
to just strictly rely on my own brain. I don't like to pay attention
to ADP.
That's
probably a
ADP.
Good call. There's just so much noise out there now. I feel like fantasy football is more popular right now than it has been.
I draft whoever I want. I don't like that. That makes it more fun. Yeah. Like third round, I don't care if I have to scroll past 27 guys. If I think that you're going to give me third round production, I'm just going to draft you right now.
See, that makes it more fun.
And then
people
did that with me like last year when I drafted like Cooper Kupp in like the third round or second round and like Debo back to back. And yeah, look what happened.
You were laughing at the end.
I drafted Derrick Henry 1-1. And they were like, yeah, what an idiot, which I guess that didn't work out. But for a while, there was a point this season when Derrick Henry was leading the league and I had him and Cooper and Debo and I was rolling. But, oh, man, I want some fantasy now, too.
Yeah, I feel like it's just everywhere.
I like auction drafts.
I've never done one.
I like auction drafts, though, and I only have one league that does them, but I'm a big fan of auction drafts, and I'm a big fan of FOB for waiver pickups. Where
is that, like a budget?
Yeah, everyone just gets a budget, and you have it, you know, to spend on the year.
We've discussed that in some of my leagues, and it sounds like a good system.
But it's hard to get everyone on board. I think it works really well. People are just scared to
change. It's hard to get on board, yeah.
But it's better. Like, it's, I mean, like week one, if some dude goes off, like, how fair is it that, you know, whatever random person the waiver order decided was first, like, gets that guy? So then everyone can just bid a chunk of their $100 designated for the season. And maybe you're conservative the first 3 weeks, and then, you know, some injuries pile up and some new guys emerge. And, you know, week six, week seven, all of a sudden you can drop bags on guys that no one else can. Like, it's all a lot of fun. There's a lot of strategy to it. I like that. And I like the, is it called Vampire Leagues?
Yeah, I have heard of that.
No,
I've heard of that.
Thinking of, though. It's the one where each week you're not playing against people, but the team that finishes last gets eliminated and their players get released to the waiver wire.
Well, that doesn't sound as fun.
It's a lot of fun.
That doesn't sound as fun. Like, so what happens when you're done? You're done.
You're done.
You just don't play fantasy anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you just do that as like a side league. Okay. But, you know, you get like 14 people, 12
people. Survive in advance.
Week one, whoever has the lowest score, they're done. All their players go on the waivers. Everyone has $200 FOB. It's great.
There was that one that you were talking about, how like everyone drafts except for one guy, and they are the only one that can use the waivers. Like, no one else can use the waivers all season long.
I like that a lot, too. But, man, I need some fantasy. What else did you make me think of? Oh, the no running back strategy. I'm also rolling with that again this year.
I don't know about that.
No?
No, I don't know.
It works.
I feel like there are so many good receivers like this year that are like late. There's so much more depth in the NFL in terms of receivers. I mean, that's usually the case, but I just feel like
if I can draft the first three rounds, three receivers that'll finish in the top 10 or
that's,
top 15.
That's helpful, but then your main running backs. But then I can get Miles Sanders.
That's when I get like Ty Algier and like Michael Carter and whatever, you know, like that.
It's risky. I don't know if I'm on board, but I like it. I respect it. I admire it. I don't know if I'd do it.
Well, we're off and rolling here in the Fan Run Studios. And on the other side, we'll get into a little NCAA college football news. Some weird stuff might be happening in the future of college football. Stay with us here on the Blitz. So there are a couple interesting stories on the business side of things in college athletics right now that are kind of, you know, holding the headlines this morning. One of them we already kind of knew about. One of them broke last night, as ESPN and Pete Thamel had a report that during the college football playoff board discussions, or the college football playoff board's discussions, they discussed the possibility of potentially restructuring how college football is governed. So the 11 presidents and chancellors who make up the college football playoff's board of managers, they had their Zoom meeting on Monday. And multiple sources told ESPN that the board of managers briefly discussed the possibility of restructuring college football, with the idea presented that it would be governed outside of the NCAA, the most logical place for the sport to be run. Outside of the NCAA, obviously, it would be, the college football playoff. Like, just that board of people would be the body that governs college football. And that's what they discussed on the call. They currently oversee the sport's postseason playoff, and it does have contractual ties to other marquee postseason bowl games. So the thought is, because of those relationships and contractual obligations, basically, that, you know, that the college football playoff would be the most likely destination for running major college football outside of the NCAA. They would be the ones that would be most set up to be able to do that. Sources also said, hey, these discussions, they're in, you know, early stages, and it could be considered just the first steps of a complicated process that would resemble a marathon. That's the quote. But this could be pretty significant, you know, if, you know, this actually does end up happening in 5, 10 years, as it's just the next step for me in college football, being less about college football and more about minor league football, basically. You know, I think that's already
it's just changing so much and so recently as well.
And I think we're all kind of, you know, racing towards a destination that but no one really knows where we're going. But I think we're all trying to get there as fast as we can. But no one truly knows. I feel like we're a pack of buffalo just, you know, sprinting towards a cliffside about to fall off. That's what it feels like to me, what college football is right now. You know, with conference realignment getting out of control, with, you know, these TV rights negotiations, you know, getting into these astronomical numbers and money really being the driving force of college football with NIL and immediate eligibility rules within the transfer portal, you know, that is basically turning college football, you know, in off season into free agency. With all of these different factors, I think you're getting further and further away from the elements of college football that makes college football so great. And, you know, before you know it, the further and further removed you get from what we know as college football, you know, I think eventually the more you start to lose some fan interest. You know, all of a sudden you're not selling out 100,000-seat stadiums across the country. All of a sudden you're not, you know, dominating every other sport besides the NFL and TV numbers. Because who wants to watch minor league football? Like, the thing that it makes college football great is the traditions and the regional aspects and the history in college football. The idea of, you know, you're representing a university and there's tradition to that. Like, there's just, you know, a level of importance to that. I think the amateurism is pretty important as well to the fans and their enjoyment of college football to a certain extent. So, I don't know. Am I overreacting here, Andy? I just feel like this is another move towards a terrible direction for college sports.
I don't think you're overreacting. I think just in general, the timing of this is kind of, it's weird. And I think it is just kind of like the first step of putting this out there to see how the reaction will be. And like the report said, I mean, this is probably something that would take a long time to do. But things are moving in that direction where, you know, college football is not just your standard, oh, you're going to come and get an education and play some football and then have a chance to go to the pros. It's going to start to become more like its own professional league, whether, you know, it's affiliated with the university or not. That's just how it's becoming with NIL. Like you said, conferences are kind of aligning in ways where you get the powerhouses all together. That's just kind of the direction it's moving, whether that's going to be, you know, in the next 5 years or 10 years, it's just going to be a completely different landscape. So I think the direction the football playoff board is taking is like, how are we going to adjust to this? Are we going to, you know, make moves ourselves? And of course, they're going to want it to be within their own jurisdiction. I believe that's made up of several different presidents from a couple of universities. I don't know the exact list of that board. But I just think that they have to adapt to the adapting landscape as well. And I feel like they realize that the tradition is kind of number one. Like, I feel like if they still want a successful product, they have to realize that, hey, what are the things that mainly drive in this revenue is that affiliation with universities. Because that would be really hard, you know, like if these teams at some point, you know, will still carry the name of this university, but we're not really affiliated with this university's athletic department. Because that could be something that happens. Like, you know, if it becomes a professional league, you could see teams break away from their, you know, universities in some way. Like, this is just all just so far down the road, and this is the early steps. But I feel like there has to be some sort of level of keeping that tradition and keeping the connections with the universities, just because, like you said, it would be hard to treat it like a G League for the NBA or a minor league for baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I think I hope that they realize how important some of these traditional aspects are to their product. But what I'm worried about is that, you know, greed is blinding. And right now, a lot of the leadership in college football, it feels like their main focus is how do I make, you know, $65 million a year from TV rights instead of 55? You know, how do I make 70 instead of 60? Like, how do I continue to get more money out of TV rights, which is then, you know, the driving force of expansion, which is how you end up with UCLA and USC in the Big Ten, which is how you're going to end up with, you know, some poor UCLA volleyball team flying across the country to College Park, Maryland on a Tuesday night and still trying to go to class on Wednesday afternoon, which is, you know, how you're going to end up with Rutgers fans having to wake up at 9 a.m. to watch Big Noon kickoff at USC and watch Lincoln Riley trounce them by 45. Like, for some of these schools, I mean, you're already starting to lose some of those traditional aspects. And
yeah,
and as conference expansion is likely going to continue, I mean, sadly, it does feel like we're headed towards Big Ten versus the SEC and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, a conference expansion has always been a thing, but it's just so different now with all the TV deals.
Because we finally, I feel like we finally, I mean, you've had some instances of, you know, breaking out of things regionally, like West Virginia and the Big 12, but I feel like things have still been kept somewhat regional.
I think it's just trying to find that balance. It feels just like a Wild West scene right now where everyone's kind of switching conferences. There's TV deals expiring. There's just so much in the air. NIL is a completely new frontier. So there's just, I feel like everyone's just trying to figure it out. And every university is
trying to change
just everything. Everyone's just trying to adapt, I think, in a way. And so I think this is either a way of like saying, hey, we, as the College Football Playoff Board, we need to react to what's going on because things are rapidly shifting around. I think it's their response to like, hey, what are we going to do? Are we just going to stay with the same deal, or are we going to also try to keep up? Because, you know, 10 years, things could be different. So why not? Let's just start the early proceedings. I heard it was they just talked about it for 5 minutes, but that's enough to kind of get things stirring and things to start building. I think it's not all just going to be – I don't think it's all greed. I think a lot of it is just like, you know, how can we maximize this? This is obviously a well-sought-after product. How can we maximize this? And there's going to be a lot of growing pains with that, sure. Like, you're going to have to figure out maybe some of that travel deal, like some of the weirdness of Rutgers going to UCLA. I don't know. I think it's just going to be about slowly testing the waters. There might be even different proposals. Probably won't be the first one we hear or last time we hear about this certain scenario. I think it's just going to be a lot of let's just try to figure this out together. There's going to be things that don't work. There are going to be things that are work. It's just going to be a completely different college football scene than it was, you know, at the beginning of the 2000s, the beginning of the century.
I'm just worried. I'm just worried because I don't trust any of the leadership in college football, I guess, at the end of the day. We don't watch the XFL for a reason. I mean, some of us do, if some of us are a little sick, but like, we don't really watch the XFL. Like, we don't really watch the USFL, and we watch college football in the millions and tens of millions. So what's the biggest difference there? Well, obviously, I understand that, you know, there's the complexity of college football's history. I mean, they've had the staying power. Like, they've been around hundreds of years, or 100 years plus. Like, they're not just some pop-up league. But at the same time, you know, it is just another level of football underneath the NFL. So, yeah, if you lose that NCAA ties, if you lose those college ties, and well, you're going to lose a lot of the viewers too. And then all of a sudden these networks are going to be trying to get out of these contracts, or, you know, going to be trying to find ways to lessen the money owed if the viewership goes down. And all of this is, none of this is in the immediate future. All of this is, you know, potentially 5, 10, 15 years down the road, but it feels like it's kind of the path we're heading on.
Yeah, I mean, I got a couple of questions about it all. It's just like, I wonder how the NCAA is going to respond to this and what they're going to say about it. And then
I feel like they're too powerless to be able to do anything. Like, they can't even like monitor the sport now. So like, how are they going to try to gain back control of it too?
I feel like what'll differentiate this from like the XFL is, like, I feel like a lot of fan bases are still going to watch their team, you know, if it's wearing their colors, having that logo, still carrying that name base.
Yeah, you'll keep
that's
going to
be the difference. You keep that around. You're not going to lose a lot of fans. They're still going
to
watch.
Yeah, I just think you won't at first, but eventually you'll start to lose more and more. You'll still always keep a core that is significantly bigger than what the XFL or USFL or anything like that will ever have, or any of the other minor leagues, AAA, AA, G League, whatever else. You'll still have a significantly bigger core than that, but I think you're going to lose a lot off the top. Eventually.
Is there any changes that you'd like to see to the current college football like landscape? Like, do you want a different playoff? Because I know that was a big discussion.
I'd like to see an expanded playoff because I would like to – which is another thing, yeah, like you mentioned, another thing that they did discuss yesterday.
It had been something they had been talking about for years, and I don't think they really brought it up.
They brought it they briefly talked about it yesterday. It looks like, according again to this report, a lot of work to be done, and including an agreement on the format, but the door still remains open for the discussion of finding, you know, a new deal that could be put into place before the final two seasons.
Yeah, because the current deal expires in 2024, does it not?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess it's either try to sneak something in there now or wait it out until that point.
They also feel like they left too much money on the table by not implementing a new playoff before 2026, perhaps as much as $500 million.
Because I guess if they're
and
gonna
much
make
of
the
obstruction to the 12-team playoff seems to have dissipated. So it does feel, I mean, that is a good sign. I think that means that a 12-team playoff, whether it's 3 years from now or 6 years from now, I think is likely. It's something that we're probably going to see. And I'm a fan of that, especially if it includes some kind of group of five tie-in. Because that's my biggest problem with the current playoff format is that there are 66 Power 5 teams, if you want to include Independence, Notre Dame, and BYU in that. There are 131 teams in college football. Half of college football, essentially... You know, we saw Cincinnati break through, so that's finally the first exception. But essentially, half of college football is playing in a sport, in a league, where no matter what they do, they can't actually ever win a championship. And I don't think that, you know, 60-whatever teams should be able to play an entire season, go 12-0, and be told, yeah, you don't even get a chance because we still... We know you won all your games, but hey, we still don't think you're good enough to beat this team because, well, this team's in the SEC, well, this team's in the Big 12, or this team's in the Big 10, and this team recruits 4 and 5 stars and has a legendary coach and plays in a big stadium, so we don't even think you deserve the chance to play them. And Cincinnati, I mean, they're the best. I would say they're probably better than that undefeated UCF team, so like they're the best undefeated like group of five team we've seen, and they put up a decent fight in the first round. You know, it wasn't ultra competitive, but it was more competitive than a lot of other teams would have been in that game. So maybe that does, you know, prove it a little bit for them, but I want to see some sort of group of five tie-in where the highest rated group of five team gets a spot in a 12-team playoffs. So that would be, you know, if that's what a 12-team playoff gets us, and that's what I'm in favor of, I obviously the group of five team is probably not going to win, but I mean, if we just base things off of what's probably going to happen, then sports will be stupid. Like, if upsets are one of the best parts about sports, like getting behind an underdog is one of the best parts about sports. I mean, you know, that's App State can go into the Big House and beat Michigan. You know, UMBC can, on any given day, could wake up and beat Virginia by 20. So, like, you don't know for sure what's going to happen. So if a team earns that, you know, goes undefeated, I think they should get a chance to play for a championship. You know that, and there's also the argument, well, why don't they just play a tougher schedule? Teams aren't scheduling them. If you're a really good group of five team, a good Power 5 team is not going to schedule you because why would they? Like, it's a lose-lose. I mean, if you lose, then you lost to a group of five team. How embarrassing. And even if you win, like, was it really worth it to try to have to scrap to beat a team like that when you don't need that win if you're already just in a major conference? So, you know, it's a lot more difficult for group of five teams, and I think that could open the door up for them.
Yeah, I'm all on board with just more meaningful games. I mean, the playoff is – I know some people say the playoff isn't competitive how it is, but I like giving those teams right on the cusp the extra chance. And yeah, you can give conference champions, you know, more of a position to have that auto bid. You can kind of go down that route. So I think it's cool, and I think they will do it eventually, just maybe not as sooner as people might have thought in the past, but I think we're getting that way as well.
I think what's upsetting about the expansion is just that they're moving so fast, and it feels like they're killing a product that already sells itself, kind of. You know, you already know that people are going to be watching your your football games every Saturday, like Charlie's saying, sitting down at 9 a.m. to watch College game day and not moving from your couch pretty much the whole day. They're just moving a little bit too fast for, like, the average fan, it feels like, and you just want it to stop a little bit because you feel like you're losing control and they're just spiraling this thing out of here where they're just doing whatever they can to make as much money, and they're losing the competitive nature of what and the beauty of what college football really is, it feels like. And it's really disappointing to see, like, the potential track that college sports may be going down. And I guess specifically football, is they're trying to break away from everything else. It seems like a very slippery slope, I would say.
There's definitely a lot of questions, but I ultimately don't think they're going to break too far away to where it won't be an enjoyable product, because it still has to have a lot of those things, as we mentioned.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I have a hard time trusting anyone in a leadership position and in the higher ups of college athletics at this point, but not like the schools individually, but the boards and the NCAA and whatever else, just the commissioners of conferences. Like, I have a hard time putting my faith into those people just because they've shown that money is their driving factor, not necessarily making the best possible product. But man, I would love a 12-team playoff. I would love it. I think that might actually be, you know, I know that the headline grabber is potentially breaking away from the NCAA, but they did mention, hey, they talked about that for maybe 5 minutes. You know, that out of the entire Zoom meeting, that was maybe 5 minutes, and it is maybe the first step in what could be a marathon. So, you know, that could take a while, but I do think the more significant thing from this story is that it seems like we are closer to getting to a 12-team playoff, that they think that there's more money out there, that there isn't the same opposition that there was. And a 12-team playoff could mean a lot for Tennessee, too. Because right now it doesn't feel like realistically there's a path now or any time in the immediate future for Tennessee to make a college football playoff, just because, you know, until we get two new schools in the SEC and reformat the scheduling, like, you have Alabama and Georgia on your schedule, and then presumably Alabama a second time if you were to somehow, you know, get to that point. And if you're having to, you know, if you have those three games, it's pretty impossible to still finish as one of the top four teams unless you really just have, you know, some elite team or some generational player driving your team. But all of a sudden, if you have a 12-team playoff, I mean, if there was a 12-team playoff this year, I would say that Tennessee would be very much in the conversation. Because if you had a 12-team playoff this year, if you're Tennessee, you just have to win every game you're favored in and go on the road to beat LSU to make a playoff. You win the 9 games that you'll projected to be that you'll be a projected favorite in and beat LSU on the road, who I don't think will be a good team. And if you got to 10-2 with your only losses being to Georgia and Alabama, yeah, you'd be in the top 12. You'd find yourself in that spot. So, I mean, that's just another reason I'd be a big proponent of this 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I mean, more meaningful games. It's just like, what's the beauty of March Madness come March? It's just there's 64 teams all going for one championship, and it makes it entertaining.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other big arguments against the expansion of the playoffs is that it's too many games. I would say if you ask every player on all 131 teams what their goals are for the future of their football careers, 90% would tell you that I want to be an NFL player. You know, I don't think that realistically 90% would think that they could, but I think they'd tell you they'd like to be if they could set a goal for themselves and try to achieve it. So with most of these guys, especially once you get to those top 12 teams, most of them would just be, like, the majority of starting lineups would at least have a shot to play in the NFL or get a UDFA or get a camp invite. Well, if you're going to play in the NFL, you're playing 17 games a year plus 3 preseason games plus potentially playoff games. So, you know, expanding the playoffs and adding, you know, 1 to 2 more games, is it really that detrimental to the players and their bodies and their health if all of them in a couple years are probably going to be playing more games than that anyway in a season? It's like, I don't think that that's actually a great argument either. But with all that being said, man, some interesting stuff going on in college football. feels like this is a story meant more for June or July than, you know, 12 days before the season starts. But hey, whatever, I guess. College football, man, it's always just a little off the rails. We'll catch a quick break here, though. Come back on the other side, continue talking some college ball. Stay with us here on the Blitz.
Apex Pest Control.
It's not just the talk of the future of the structure of the NCAA that's capturing some headlines on the business side of things, as well, we also have it now official as the Big Ten has agreed to their new media rights deal. Probably one of the biggest talking points on Twitter right now is this, because they tweeted out a montage of Big Ten highlights with the SEC on CBS Music.
Disrespectful.
I am disgusted. I mean, that is a day ruiner.
That hurt me to my core to open up that video and see a Maryland uniform getting played with that beautiful jingle in the background.
They just didn't have to do it until the times come, because we still get SEC.
Make your
on
own
CBS.
Music, man. Get your own Big Ten music. This is ours. Let us just. I really thought that they would. Yeah, turn it up. I should be seeing a beautiful sunset at the Iron Bowl as we get ready to start the fourth quarter in a one-possession game as Auburn is trying to mess with Alabama's playoff hopes. Like, I shouldn't be watching, Penn State and Wisconsin scrap it out in a 17-14 game in 2 inches of snow. Like, that music should not ever be played with Big Ten football.
I think I might watch the Big Ten CBS game on mute for like the entire year. This is,
Does that mean Gary's going to stay around for the Big Ten too? Because I really thought that they would get new announcers.
No,
for the Big Ten.
The broadcasters, that's all CBS.
Like, I really thought that they would change both of those things, and they should have.
Their loyalty is in contracts are with CBS, so they will. I mean, unless they move elsewhere and their contract's up and they don't want to be a part of it, then it's going to be them.
I figured like maybe they would just buy him out and they would maybe even just...
I feel like that could have been a
big talking
point. I
thought maybe they would
even
like try to sign with ESPN.
With the music as well, but that music is so... I mean, would you say that music is probably... It's got to be the top jingle in all of college football.
That... If I was in a coma for 2.5 years... Someone could walk in and play that music.
And you're good.
I wouldn't just wake up. I would wake up and jump up out of the bed. I would be ready
come back to life.
To like get a Chick-fil-A sandwich and like fight a guy with houndstooth on. Now, like if you play that music, I'm ready to roll.
Jingles are very underrated, and I feel like college football doesn't have that other jingle that I can like really recognize. I mean, the NFL has some really good ones that you can recognize as staple, but that is... That CBS jingle 330 is number one in college football.
So this Big Ten deal, it's with Fox, NBC, and CBS. Their main goal now is to have a big-time game in all three of the major windows. And that's what they're getting here. You're going to get that night game. You're going to get the big noon kickoff. And you're going to get CBS, the 330 game. In total, 7 years, 7 years expires in 2030. It's $8.8 billion. The agreement is that's an annual value of $1.1 billion, which is right around, when we started hearing these reports a week or two ago, that was the number that they said that they thought that they were worth, that they were going to go after. The SEC's, recent deal, man, it's kind of tough for the SEC, honestly. Maybe they should have waited a little bit longer to negotiate and let the Big Ten go first. But the SEC's new deal with ESPN, 10 years, $3 billion, an annual value of $300 million. A stark difference there, obviously. I don't know. I don't really know how you correct that in the immediate future either if you're the SEC. The one thing I do think that is is not maybe being talked about as much as it should in terms of, you know, value outside of just the dollar, is that ESPN right now is still the company that controls the narrative of college football. They control really, you know, the overall sports narratives out there, like CBS, NBC, Fox. They don't have, you know, the crews that have, you know, to promote your product outside of games consistently. Like, they don't have the programming to do that. They don't have necessarily, you know, the same front from a written media side of things. I mean, ESPN's just still so deeply entrenched in the narrative of sports that, like, the SEC now has the advantage of having ESPN behind them. And I imagine that you know, the Big Ten, much like we see with the Big East in basketball, the Big East consistently a top 2 to 3 basketball conference, but you never really hear anyone driving the narrative that they are. You never really hear anyone, you know, pushing for any of these top Big East teams, talking about them. You never see their highlights leading off on SportsCenter, but, you know, you get consistent top 10 teams, but their media deals are with Fox. ESPN has no stake in the Big East basketball. Therefore, you know, they don't have any monetary interest in talking about them and putting them in front of eyes and ears. You know, you're going to do this, and obviously not to the same extent, because you still have a responsibility to cover major football, and the Big Ten is major football, but, you know, they can help drive a narrative and help drive the SEC's narrative, and I bet they probably won't cover the Big Ten as much and help, you know, drive the Big Ten's narrative as much.
Yeah, how much are we going to see College Game Day go to a Big Ten campus now? Probably not a lot.
Yeah, significantly less.
Probably not a lot. I mean, you're going to see a lot more SEC on ESPN primetime. I mean, I don't know how they're going to reschedule that. Because the thing is, I guess, the SEC's biggest game has always been that 3:30 CBS game. Now has it just become the night game ends up being the biggest game? Or do they put another one in its spot? It's just going to kind of be a different landscape.
That's my biggest worry is you know, what is the programming schedule going to look like? Because I'm very accustomed to what it is now.
Yeah.
My body is in a very specific rhythm. I know that.
That's the theme of today. It's changing. It's just.
I can't do it. Like, it's going to look so good. I'm still struggling to deal with the changing math in NFL records a year later. Like, I can't. You can't add on a change of my TV schedule. My brain can't handle that much at once. Like, I'm still having to go, well, I think they would finish 8-8, so now there's an extra game. Do I want to give them an extra loss or an extra win? Like, I still have to go 9-7, add one, 10-7. Like, now I'm also going to be like, well, okay, 3:30, don't go to CBS. I got to go to ESPN2 now. Like, I don't want to have to do that. I'm also worried that there's going to be, I don't know, is there going to be less live football on cable TV now? Like, are we going to have more streamed? Are we going to have more different places? Like, am I going to have one TV on Peacock and one on Paramount and then one on cable and you know, one on CBS? Like, I don't want to have to deal with that either. And I think that that's another thing that maybe hurts the Big Ten, which they probably don't care about because they have the deal. But, you know, games that would traditionally be on ESPNU or like ESPN News or you know, some sort of alternate, you know, ESPN channel, the CBS, Fox, and NBC, you know, they can't quite offer the same amount of alternate viewing locations. So some of those games are going to go on, you know, Paramount and Peacock, and they've said that, like, they're going to have games attached to streaming services. But I would watch Illinois play Indiana week 4 if it was on Big Ten Network or ESPNU or whatever else, because I'm going to have one main game, then on the other TV, it's like I'm just going to constantly be flipping things around. I think a lot of people are the same way. If they're not watching their own team, they like to channel surf, flip games around. But now if you're saying, like, well, if you want to watch this game, you have to load a streaming app and then turn it on. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to, every time I want to flip over to Indiana, Illinois, you know, hit smart TV apps, scroll over to Peacock, and find the live stream. Like, I'm just going to be like, oh, that's too bad. I guess that game's just not going to get watched by me today. And that's that. I don't know.
They'll probably do some of that, but it's also, I mean, that's what ESPN's been doing with ESPN Plus for a while.
Yeah, but it's always, like, one game.
Exactly. Like, I don't think they're going to make the biggest game of the week or like, you know, maybe even the top 5 games in the conference be on a streaming service. But I mean, I think Tennessee has a game on their schedule on SEC Network Plus this year.
Every SEC team gets one game on SEC Network Plus.
Yeah. So it's not just going to be an overwhelming start where everything's on a streaming. I think they'll just be kind of – they'll start with one.
Sam, any thoughts on you know, this shift in coverage besides the fact that we need our jingle back?
Yeah, the jingle is honestly the biggest part that I mean, it's like something got ripped away from me. It was like a piece of my childhood that just got ripped away.
It was just hard to see that video so close to the season because now you're going to have that in the back of your mind when you actually hear
it. I haven't watched it yet.
I'm used to the CBS.
I'm trying not to.
I'm used to them just posting that with SEC highlights. And it's like, oh, you got 2 weeks until football. What a great little preview. And then no, it's just Big Ten now.
Because this is this is. Do I have my years off, or is this the last year of SEC on CBS?
I think you're. It starts. The new deal starts in 2024.
So we got 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the end, but
it's coming to an end, and that just is a tough thing to accept.
Doesn't the Big Ten start in 2023 though?
It does on this.
How's that?
This graphic that I'm looking at, it does. I don't know. Maybe SEC keeps the CBS games and the Big Ten starts just on Fox and NBC for 2023, and then
I guess
2024
maybe.
They take over CBS too. I'm not exactly sure how that works.
What is our CBS game in week one? Do we get one in week one?
I feel like sometimes they wait.
Yeah, I think they do wait a little bit.
Because there's not really an SEC.
Like, do they have a 3:30 game at all on CBS week one? Or is that, I guess, maybe?
I don't think there's just an SEC game on week one.
Yeah, no, I just thought sometimes they still just had a game at 3:30. I'm looking at the next week, too. There's no.
I think it is interesting, CBS though, to see what the future of the media streaming type of deal is here with all these games, because I don't know. It kind of seems like a bad deal for the SEC, but I mean, it's SEC football. Are they really gonna screw this thing up? I feel like they've got this thing ironed out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, they're making a lot of money other ways that maybe the Big Ten doesn't sometimes. But hour one brought to you by our friends over at Big Orange Phillies. Hey, if you want to call in, share your thoughts on the future of college football or the future of college football broadcasting or anything else we've talked about this hour, we'll phone in on the Big Orange Philly phone lines. Your number to call in, that's 865-546-8200. Again, 865-546-8200. And hey, our friends Big Orange Phillies in Halls, man, they are the place to be. If you want to pop in, quick lunch break, I might head over there for lunch today. They have some of the best Phillies around, some of the best food around. But they're a versatile spot, too. They're a great place for some beers after a game. Hey, maybe a Friday night, you're getting in town. You don't know what to eat after a long day of traveling to Knoxville for the game Saturday. Big Orange Phillies, that's a pretty good place to go. And, hey, on the weekends, they got live music. They have pool, darts, karaoke. A little bit of everything. Located at 6625 Maynardville Pike. They also have a pretty cool event going on this week. A meet and greet to get you ready for football season with Princeton fan Jabari Davis and Latrell Bumpus. That's this Sunday, August 21st from 1 to 3:30 p.m. Well, they will have autograph posters that are free, food and drink specials, and it's a good time, people hanging out. So make sure you go check that out this weekend, too, if you have the time. Sam, go ahead and send us a break. Hour one done. Hour two on deck.